This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
Welcome to another deep dive. I am so glad you are joining us today because, well, we have a really wild one for you. Imagine trying to build this state-of-the-art multi-million dollar supercar, right? But you are legally banned from buying the engine.
Oh yeah, and the battery. And the navigation system too.
Exactly. You literally can't buy the core parts. And that is effectively the reality China's tech sector faced just a couple of years ago when all those massive export controls dropped.
Right. The prevailing assumption everywhere was that without those critical, you know, imported components, the whole assembly line would just grind to a halt.
But today, our mission is to make sense of a massive intelligence briefing that shows they are building the car anyway, and they are driving it straight into the global market.
Which, I mean, it forces a complete reassessment of everything we thought we knew about the global tech supply chain. Because the briefing we are unpacking today isn't just about one isolated breakthrough.
No, it's everywhere.
Yeah, we are looking at a simultaneous, highly coordinated explosion across artificial intelligence, humanoid robotics, semiconductor manufacturing, and telecommunications.
And to help us make sense of this massive influx of data, we have this incredibly robust stack of notes and commentary provided by former lawmaker Kyungjin Kim.
His insights are going to be completely essential as our compass here.
Definitely. Let's unpack this, because what you are going to see today is a historic collision. We are going to look at how software breakthroughs are literally pulling physical robots out of the laboratory, how tiny ceramic capacitors are bringing trillion-dollar valuations to their knees, and how all of this is being navigated under just intense geopolitical friction.
And I think the key to really understanding this landscape for you, the listener, is realizing that you cannot look at any of these sectors in isolation. The software development is inextricably linked to the hardware constraints.
Right.
And those constraints dictate how these tools are ultimately deployed into the real physical world.
So let's start with the software side, right? The brains of the operation. If you've been following the AI space even a little, you know about OpenRouter.
Oh, yeah. The gladiatorial arena for AI.
Right. It's the arena where developers go to blind test and rank the most powerful AI models in the world against each other. And for the past 2 months, there was this mysterious model dominating the coding charts under the anonymous name Owl Alpha.
Yeah. Nobody knew who built it.
Nobody.
Until the mask finally came off. Owl Alpha was revealed to be LongCat 2.0, developed by the Chinese tech giant Meituan.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it is a massive 1.6 trillion parameter coding agent model. But, you know, the sheer size of the model actually isn't the headline here.
Right, really? Because 1.6 trillion is huge.
It is huge, but the critical detail is the hardware it was trained on. Meituan trained LongCat 2.0 entirely on a cluster of 50,000 Chinese ASICs.
Which means absolutely zero NVIDIA chips were involved in the process. I want to pause here for a second because this runs completely counter to the industry consensus.
Completely.
I mean, we have been told for years that if you want to train a frontier level model, you are waiting in line to buy NVIDIA GPUs. Not just for the physical hardware, but because of CDIT, right? NVIDIA's proprietary software ecosystem that essentially locks developers into their architecture. So how do you even pull off a 1.6 trillion parameter training run using just ASICs?
Well, it requires a monumental feat of software engineering just to bypass that lock-in. To understand why, you kind of have to look at the difference between a GPU and an ASIC. A GPU, like the ones NVIDIA makes, is essentially a general-purpose Swiss Army knife.
Okay, so it can do a bunch of things.
Exactly. It can render a video game, simulate weather patterns, or train an AI model. But an ASIC, an application-specific integrated circuit, is more like a scalpel. It is hard-coded at the very silicon level to do one specific mathematical operation incredibly fast and nothing else.
So you have 50,000 incredibly sharp scalpels, but you have to figure out how to coordinate them perfectly without cutting yourself.
Yeah, that is the challenge. Networking 50,000 individual ASICs to act as a single unified brain without the benefit of NVIDIA's software ecosystem means Meituan had to build entirely new custom networking protocols completely from scratch.
Wow.
They basically proved that the software moat can be crossed if you just throw enough engineering talent at it.
Wow.
What's fascinating here is that LongCat 2.0 takes the theoretical vulnerability of U.S. export controls and makes it an empirical reality.
Right, because if a company can build a world-leading model using 50,000 domestic ASICs, the geopolitical leverage of controlling those cutting-edge Western GPUs starts to diminish pretty rapidly.
Exactly. The leverage evaporates.
Now, while Matron1 is proving the capability is there, another major player, DeepSeek, is proving that the business model itself is maturing. They are rolling out their DeepSeek V4 model, but they are introducing a completely new API pricing structure.
Yeah, this part is really interesting.
Right. They are charging double during peak Beijing business hours. So specifically from 9 to 12 in the morning and 2 to 6 in the afternoon. And at the same time, they are permanently retiring their deprecated older models.
Which is a definitive signal that the growth at all costs era of the Chinese AI price war is over. Implementing time-based differential pricing for a large language model means DeepSeek is shifting its focus toward actual monetization and server load management.
So it's basically surge pricing for your Uber, but applied to artificial intelligence.
Yeah, that's a perfect way to look at it.
Like, if you need your enterprise code generated during the morning rush hour, you pay a premium. Does this mean the wild price war is officially over?
It certainly looks that way. They're forcing enterprise clients to optimize their workflows now. If a company has massive batch processing tasks, like translating thousands of documents or formatting raw data, they are now financially incentivized to run those tasks at 2 in the morning instead of 10 in the morning.
Which flattens out DeepSeek server load.
Right. It prevents the hardware from burning out during peak hours and maximizes their unit economics.
But here is the catch with a model like Longcat 2.0 or DeepSeek V4. An AI that can write perfect code or analyze data is still fundamentally trapped behind a screen.
Exactly.
If you want to automate your physical economy, if you want to revolutionize manufacturing, logistics, and infrastructure, that brilliant AI brain needs a physical vessel. And that brings us to the explosion we are seeing in humanoid robotics.
And the capital markets are reacting to this reality in real time. We are seeing a massive pivot in investment toward embodied AI. Take the robotics company Unitree, for example. They just executed an IPO on the STAR Market, which is essentially China's NASDAQ.
And they were approved in just 104 days.
Which is insanely fast.
Right. That is the fastest approval record on that entire exchange. They raised 4.2 billion RMB, which is over 600 million US dollars. And this is for a company that just posted 226% revenue growth.
They are scaling at an industrial pace right now, and they are not an isolated case. There's another firm, Agibots, that recently surpassed 15,000 produced units. They're claiming an 80% market share in the domestic humanoid sector.
15,000 humanoids.
Yeah. And they are already exporting. They're signing memorandums of understanding to supply robots for finance, insurance, and e-commerce applications as far away as Kazakhstan.
Okay, I have to play devil's advocate here, though. If you are scrolling your timeline, you might think of humanoid robots as those highly choreographed viral videos of machines doing backflips in a padded, controlled laboratory.
The Boston Dynamics style videos, yeah.
Exactly. But the briefing details that the State Grid, which is their massive state-owned electric utility, just purchased 8,500 robots for 6.8 billion RMB. That includes 5,000 robot dogs and 500 fully humanoid robots. I have to ask, are these just expensive high-tech PR stunts for the grid, or are these machines actually doing real critical infrastructure work?
Well, you don't deploy nearly $1 billion in capital for a PR stunt. The reason the state grid needs humanoids, specifically, really comes down to the legacy nature of physical infrastructure. Power grids were designed over decades for human bodies.
Oh, right.
They have uneven stairs, heavy analog levers, narrow walkways, rusty manual valves. A wheeled robot or a drone simply cannot navigate a 1980s substation to flip a critical switch.
But a humanoid robot can climb the stairs, walk across the gravel, and physically turn the dial just like a human engineer would.
That is the key. And lawyer Kyungjin Kim provides a vital piece of commentary on this exact shift. He notes that the lightning-fast Unitree IPO, combined with these massive government procurement orders, signals that China's capital markets now view humanoid robots as the absolute next strategic sector after semiconductors.
So they are officially moving out of the showroom and into unstructured environments.
Unstructured and dangerous environments.
Yeah, and the environments are brutal. Look at UBTech's Walker S2 robot. They deployed it to the China-Vietnam border in Guangxi.
Which is an incredibly challenging theater for robotics. You are dealing with high humidity, pervasive dust, totally unpredictable weather, and massive flowing crowds of foot traffic.
Right, and it's doing multilingual traveler guidance, it's patrolling corridors and scanning cargo container IDs. They're actively testing if the sensor fusion, you know, the combination of cameras, LiDAR, and physical balance protocols can actually survive harsh real-world conditions without breaking down.
And this is where all these technologies converge. You have the trillion parameter brains, and you have these highly funded, field-tested robotic bodies. But powering this entire ecosystem, I mean, training those massive AI models and processing the continuous flood of sensor data from thousands of Border Patrol robots, it requires immense physical computing infrastructure.
And that is where the system is showing extreme visible stress.
Yeah, absolutely.
The physical reality of manufacturing is violently colliding with the speed of software development. You can see this tension perfectly in the stock market. Let's look at the chip designer Cambricon. They briefly hit a historic 1 trillion RMB market cap on the STAR market. Just an astronomical valuation based on the sheer demand for their AI accelerators.
Right.
But then they issued their own internal risk warning to investors about their valuation overheating. And within 2 days, they lost 140 billion RMB in market cap. It just evaporated into thin air.
Because the market was pricing in a future that the physical supply chain just cannot currently support.
Yeah.
Cambricon actually achieved a solid profit turnaround. I mean, they posted a 185% increase in Q1 net profit, producing their chips on a 7-nanometer process.
Which is impressive.
It is. But the expectation of infinite, immediate scale ignores the physical bottlenecks of manufacturing.
And here's where it gets really interesting. When we talk about hardware bottlenecks, we usually think about the massive multi-million dollar GPU clusters. But the briefing highlights a hidden supply chain crisis involving microscopic, incredibly boring components that literally nobody thinks about. I'm talking about MLCCs, multi-layer ceramic capacitors.
Yeah, and to understand the severity of this, you have to understand what an MLCC actually does. It is a tiny, passive electronic component.
Mm-hmm.
Its only job is to act like a microscopic shock absorber for electrical current.
Okay.
It stores and releases charge to ensure power flows smoothly into a processor.
But an AI data center draws massive erratic spikes of power.
Right.
So prices for high-capacity MLCCs have surged 2 to 4 times in the Shenzhen market since the Lunar New Year. And why? Because a single NVIDIA GB200 server rack requires over 400,000 of these individual capacitors.
400,000 for one rack.
Right, so it's like building a multi-million dollar supercar, only to realize the assembly line is completely halted because you ran out of basic lug nuts. Global suppliers, like Murata in Japan, are just completely overwhelmed. Customers are demanding double what the factories can actually produce, and analysts expect this shortage to drag on until 2027.
It is the ultimate vulnerability in complex systems. You can engineer the most advanced silicon on the planet, but a 400,000 part dependency on a basic 10-cent capacitor dictates your entire production schedule.
Wow.
Former lawmaker Kung Jin Kim points out something crucial here. He says, Cambricon's wild 2-day ride on the stock market and this microscopic supply chain crisis, they must be read together. Rapid technological progress and massive valuation overheating are simply two sides of the same coin in this current gold rush.
So the capital is eager, but the physical supply chain is bound by the laws of physics and, well, manufacturing capacity. So we've tracked the explosive growth in models, the physical deployment of robots, and the agonizing hardware constraints. But because all of this is happening within China, unchecked technological growth is immediately met with strict, sweeping regulatory guardrails. And they do not waste time.
No, the speed of regulation is just as fast as the software development. The briefing details a new regulatory framework called the AI Anthropomorphization Service Management Methods, taking effect in just 8 days from the date of the report.
Just 8 days. And when you look at the implications of this law, it is a massive course correction for the consumer AI industry. It specifically targets AI services that simulate human personality, mimic human thought patterns, or try to provide, quote, continuous emotional exchange. So the AI boyfriend, the digital therapist, the virtual companion, those are the targets.
The government is stepping in to mandate anti-addiction systems. They require clear notifications that the user is interacting with a machine, and they enforce instant termination features to actively break emotional dependency.
But the reaction from the tech giants is what really caught my attention here. Alibaba's Qwin and ByteDance's Doubao are voluntarily shutting down their AI agent features entirely. Qwin is actually going as far as permanently deleting users' agent settings and wiping all their conversation histories. Think about that.
That's a huge move.
They have 345 million users on Doubao alone, Why would you deliberately torch your own user database and shut down a wildly popular service before the law even officially takes effect? Why not just build the anti-addiction toggle and keep your users?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, lawyer Kung Jin Kim provides a really counterintuitive perspective on this dynamic. He argues that this immediate, drastic compliance showcases China's extremely high regulatory predictability.
Predictability. I mean, nerfing a product overnight feels totally reactionary to me.
I get that. But if you view it from the perspective of capital allocation, it makes perfect sense. When the regulatory body signals a red line, the companies do not spend 3 years testing it in the court system, lobbying for loopholes, or risking massive punitive fines. They comply instantly and comprehensively.
Okay, I see.
Kim points out that while this incurs massive immediate costs for platforms like Alibaba and ByteDance, I mean, they are literally setting millions of dollars of user data on fire.
Right.
But having a low uncertainty regulatory environment is actually a massive advantage for long-term investments.
Oh, because the capital knows exactly where the boundaries are.
Precisely.
You don't spend 5 years and billions of dollars developing a deeply emotional companion robot only to have it banned the day it hits the market. You pivot your R&D budget immediately toward industrial applications like those state grid robots where the government is actively encouraging growth.
Yeah, the boundaries are rigid, but they are incredibly clear. However, everything we've discussed so far, the models, the robots, the regulations, it is all happening inside China's borders. The shockwaves from this tech explosion are violently rattling the global economy.
Especially for neighboring tech giants.
Yes. And the epicenter of that external pressure is hitting South Korea.
The economic data coming out of South Korea right now is staggering. But as we look closer, it is hiding a massive structural vulnerability. They just broke the $100 billion monthly export barrier for the first time in their history, hitting $102.25 billion.
Huge milestone.
And the engine behind that is semiconductors. Semiconductor exports surged 199.5% compared to the previous year.
Heavily led by high bandwidth memory, or HBM, chips. To understand why HBM is so critical, imagine a massive AI processor as a bustling factory. It doesn't matter how fast the factory works if there is only a single one-lane dirt road to bring in raw materials.
Right. It creates a massive bottleneck.
Exactly. HBM acts as a massive multi-lane superhighway. It stacks memory chips vertically with microscopic elevators to feed data to the processor at blistering speeds. You basically cannot run an AI data center without it.
And when you look at where South Korea is sending all this memory, their exports to China specifically jumped 92.1%.
Which is an incredible volume of high-end memory flowing directly into the Chinese market.
So what does this all mean? If you are South Korea, you are breaking all-time export records. You are making incredible money selling the very memory chips that fuel China's AI boom. From a purely economic standpoint on a spreadsheet, that sounds like an absolute pure win. So why is the Korean stock market panicking?
Yeah, the volatility is wild.
We saw the KOSPI index experience extreme volatility. Samsung and SK Hynix, the two absolute titans of Korean tech, lost $290 billion in market cap in a single day over doubts about this AI infrastructure boom before rebounding almost completely the very next day. So where is the downside for South Korea?
Well, this raises an important question, and the downside is entirely geopolitical. I lean heavily on the commentary from former lawmaker Kung Jin Kim to explain this, because he diagnoses the hidden risk perfectly. He points out that a 92% increase in semiconductor exports to China means Korean memory chips are actively feeding the very Chinese AI data centers that the United States is trying to throttle.
Ah. Because the U.S. banned the export of logic chips like the NVIDIA GPUs, but memory chips have basically operated in a gray area.
Exactly, and that gray area is the problem. South Korea is supplying the data highways for models like Longcat 2.0, despite sweeping U.S. export controls aimed at slowing Chinese AI development. And Kim notes that without equivalent foreign direct product rule, or FDPR, measures in place, which is the legal mechanism the U.S. uses to control how foreign products using U.S. technology are sold.
Right.
Without those, South Korea is sitting on a geopolitical powder keg.
Because at any moment, the U.S. could look at that 92% export spike and decide to just close the loophole. They could invoke the FDPR and declare that South Korea is undermining American national security by providing the memory needed to run these sanctioned data centers.
And the entire Korean stock market is essentially propped up by the gamble that the U.S. won't suddenly change the rules. Mm-hmm. Former lawmaker Kung Jin Kim makes the stakes very clear. South Korea is enjoying a massive historic export boom right now, but but they are simultaneously holding an immense amount of potential U.S. sanction risk.
It is a highly precarious balancing act between their biggest security ally and their most lucrative export market.
And one stroke of a pen in Washington could evaporate that $100 billion monthly export record.
Wow. And completely sever the supply line of HBM chips to the Chinese robotics and AI sectors we just analyzed. We also saw Anthropic cracking down on Chinese firms like Alibaba and ByteDance using shell companies and offshore workarounds to access Claude, which just shows how tight this net is getting.
Yeah, the tension is everywhere.
This has been a massive deep dive, but I think it illustrates just how deeply interconnected this entire ecosystem is. We've gone from anonymous 1.6 trillion parameter AI models, proven they can bypass American hardware bottlenecks, to the rapid capitalization of humanoid robots executing physical tasks on the power grid.
Right.
We've seen how a microscopic ceramic capacitor can stall a trillion-dollar industry, how swift regulatory compliance actually provides capital certainty, and how South Korea is surfing an incredibly lucrative yet incredibly dangerous geopolitical loophole.
The code needs the hardware. The hardware needs the capacitors. The robots need the code. And all of it operates under the constant looming threat of global trade restrictions. If one piece falls out of alignment, the entire machine stops.
Thank you so much for taking this deep dive with us to map out these fault lines. But before you go, I know there is one final provocative detail buried in the telecommunications section of the briefing that we just have to talk about.
There is, and it really ties everything we've discussed today together perfectly. China has formally announced a roadmap to build 50,000 dedicated 5G private networks specifically for the industrial internet by 2030.
Wait, 50,000 private networks, and not for cell phones, but for factories.
For machines. So if you are listening to this and wondering where this is all heading, I want you to imagine the near future. Think about those 8,500 robots being deployed to the power grid today.
Okay.
Now imagine a manufacturing sector in 2030 where those robots are not just walking around making independent decisions. Imagine they are centrally managed by a 1.6 trillion parameter AI model, communicating instantly with near zero latency over 50,000 dedicated 5G factory networks.
Oh man, they cease to be individual machines.
They become a hive mind. The question you have to ask yourself, and what global policymakers are undoubtedly wrestling with right now, is this. How can the rest of the world compete with an automated physical workforce that thinks, adapts, and moves as a single, perfectly coordinated organism?
The components are already being manufactured. Take that thought with you, and we'll catch you on the next deep dive.
This program is provided by Lawyer Kyungjin Kim.